And now, with thanks to Aramount Furniture, Cloncalleg, Tullamore. Quality furniture for every room at the right price with free delivery. Find Aramount Furniture Tullamore on Facebook. Now the heat's no longer a subject of rants. This guy is here to help you do what you can't. From barbecues to tools, as the Midlands now cools. Brian, why have you shown up in studio in your pants? Mr. Fix-It.
Yes, indeed.
Well, you know, he did stick his head in the studio door and said, I was under pressure.
Yes.
So, well, you know, he has performed brilliant ones in the past. Absolutely brilliant ones. Probably wouldn't call that a brilliant one, Curtis.
No, no. But you know, marks for effort and all
yes,
that kind of
yeah.
thing. How are you keeping?
Great.
That's a pity.
You look so disappointed that I'm great. That's very rude.
What happened to make you so cheerful today?
I'm always cheerful. It's one of the
did you have
advantages
a good night?
Of being a bit simple. I slept well last night.
All right.
Yeah,
okay.
I did.
First question. Oh, it says photo attached. You'll have to WhatsApp your picture. It doesn't arrive in by text, unfortunately. Anyway, we have a conservatory off our kitchen, and at different times we can hear something moving around in the attic of the conservatory.
We don't do poltergeists, sorry.
A wall divides the remaining house. We haven't seen anything come or leave. How could we find what's up there?
Okay, so noise this time of the year, less. Look, mice and rats, you know, they're not. You know the way a pet is not just for Christmas?
Mm.
Well, mice and rats are not just for the winter. But they are much more prevalent in the house during the winter.
Yeah, but I think this is possibly what's confusing. If I have the picture right.
Okay.
So a mouse or a rat, how do they get into that attic if it is a sealed off space?
You don't seal off against a mouse or a rat. But I suppose what I would say at this time of the year, it is much more likely, much more likely to be either bats, who are not that noisy really, or much more likely again, birds, starlings. So particularly if you have roof tiles as opposed to slates.
Okay.
So slates are flat, roof tiles are corrugated. And what happens with the roof tiles is the starlings go in under. You see, you go into the attic and you look in the attic, turn on the lights and shine a torch and look all over the place. You don't see either bats or, well, you rarely see bats. And you certainly don't see the starlings because the starlings aren't in the attic. They sound like they're in the attic, but they're actually on the felt. So when you stand in your attic and look up, you see felt. And the felt is keeping the moisture, the water out. But the birds are actually on the felt, between the felt and the slate. Now, if you look carefully, you'll often see a little depression. Is it, yeah, where the felt is pushed down a little bit, a little bulge. Where the felt is pushed down with the birds building a nest there. But how do you find out? The first thing you do is walk the perimeter of the house, looking down, looking at the ground. Because if there's bats or birds, there'll be droppings.
Mm.
And you look at the ground and see, are there any droppings?
And that's how you find the exit and the entrance.
Correct. Mm. So if on the ground there's a load of droppings, then you look up. And if it's bats, they will be coming and going. Now, look, bats don't do any harm. You know, if it's a little attic and you're not storing anything in there, just leave them alone.
Oh, no, it's inaccessible. That's what I'm reading
from
this.
It's fine. Just, if it's bats, just leave it alone. Forget all about it. Because they are a protected species and they don't do any harm. So just leave them alone. If you're storing stuff in the attic, you'd be covering everything to make sure you don't get bat droppings on it. If it's starlings, leave it now. But next, what you do is next. Actually, at the end of the autumn, get somebody or yourself to put anti-bird combs to stop them coming back next year. And as always, you know, if you have a garage, leave the garage without doing it, and then the starlings can build in the garage where you don't hear them.
Okay. Next. Can you please ask Brian about these tiny little red spiders that are crawling on the concrete in front of the house. There are millions of them, and I'm turning it around, picture. Yeah.
So these are, so every week at this time of the year now, particularly in fine sunny weather, we get people, most people call them bloodsuckers. And they're the ones that as a child, if you push your finger against it, it splats and it leaves a big bloody stain on the, even though they're tiny, it leaves a little stain, a bloody stain on the windowsill. It's only,
and that tells you why he is the way he is.
So,
what a corrupted childhood. Torturing little insects.
You never squashed a red spider bite.
Never.
So, look, they don't do any harm. Once again, they don't really come into the house. If you have a phobia about them, and you only see them on, I don't know why, but only on concrete, on windowsills, wall cappings, and only in hot, sunny weather. As a rule, that you know, you're not even aware they're there. If you don't go looking for them, you won't see them, and you won't see them in the house. But if you have to deal with them, get a thing called Insectrol or Deathlac, which are insecticidal lacquers, and you spray it on the concrete, and if they crawl over it, they die.
A text says, Clunan, you're some bluffer. I'm not sure what that's in reference to, but it's absolutely true.
100%. Yes. 100%. Yes. Yeah, I would always describe myself as a bluffer.
Now, I'm not ignoring...
A bluffer with some knowledge.
Okay. I'm not ignoring a lot of messages we've received, by the way, about the tax man and why, for instance, some of these refunds are not automated, and also the AIB controversy, pulling out ATMs from Birr, Eden Derry and Rathdowney. We will be coming back to those very soon. But our focus now is DIY, and Brian is here until 11. So, to ask a question, pick up the phone and call 0818 300 103. If you're in Worker, it's just easier to send a text, 083 30 10 103. Powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore.
Midlands Today's Mr. Fix-It. With a range of living and sitting room suites, including beautiful Italian leather suites at Aramount Furniture Tullamore. It secures yours. Visit Aramount Furniture in Cloncullag and Tullamore or find them on Facebook.
A lady in Mount Mellick says there's an open fire in her sitting room and she doesn't use the chimney. She's had an infestation of something, possibly bees, maybe wasps, and had to get in pest control. And she's wondering, is there such a thing as a chimney cap that will just close it off and the wasps and the bees won't get in, but I'll still have ventilation?
Yeah, so there's a thing called a chimney cap, which goes on top of the chimney, like a cap. But it does leave an opening. But what you can do is you can get insect mesh and incorporate, just put the insect mesh over the chimney first. So if you can imagine, you have a jam jar and you've made jam, and traditionally what did you do? You put a bit of fabric down on top of it and you held it on with an elastic band. Mm. So now what you're going to do in this case is you're going to get the insect mesh, which is nylon and will last forever, and you put it over the chimney cap, like the jam jar, and you hold it in place with an elastic band or a cable tie or a piece of cord, and then you fit the chimney cap. And actually, it's a thing, I'm so glad that caller came. I'm always, because we regularly get people with wasps' nests in the chimney, and we suggest lighting the little bug bomb in the chimney, which kills the wasps up in the chimney. But when we sell in the shop, when we sell a chimney cap, from now on, I'm going to give a piece of thing. That's a great idea. So thanks, listener. It has come up before. But I've never thought, I've just had the revelation there in my head where I'd say, from now on, we'll do this. By the way, I have a question just come in there. I just got a picture and a patio. It's a patio. And you can see weeds in the patio and you can see moss in the patio. Mm-hmm. But you can see the weeds and the moss. So through the broken glass on the patio door. Now, this caller says, my husband kicked the patio door in temper. He's claiming it happened when a stone came off from the lawnmower and broke the glass. But I mean, there's just so much going on there. It's the broken glass plus the weeds plus the as he tried to grab my phone out of his hands.
Because it doesn't say that.
Show me.
Does it say?
Oh, sorry, it's just gone blank.
Did it? Yeah. Yes.
But you can. Yeah. It's. You can see the broken glass. Have you gotten the glass replaced yet?
No.
All right. Why not? When did it happen? When did you kick it?
So I was mowing the weeds and there was a stone and the stone was catapulted.
So you were mowing the weeds?
Yes.
You weren't mowing the lawn?
No, the weeds.
You were mowing the you were mowing the weeds on the patio. They were so bad. They were so bad you had to use a lawnmower on the patio for the weeds. Oh my God.
Yeah, let me
explain. Oh my God, that is unbelievable.
So I sprayed them first to kill them.
Okay, they don't look dead.
And they don't dissolve, so you have to maybe pull them up.
Yes.
Which is time consuming. So I got the lawnmower instead.
Oh.
But there was a stone, and unbeknownst to me, I went over it.
So this is your story. It's not that I can clearly see where it was kicked. It's a footprint.
Hang on. Do I look like I have the strength to kick so hard?
That's true.
And break a wind.
That's true.
Anyway, so the plan is, if I get another stone and mow again and target it right, I can have a matching pair.
And it'll look like a design.
And it'll save me having to replace it. Save
money. Okay, I can see that working. Not.
Well, I grew up in a thatched house. Hessian ceiling, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Hessian ceiling in the kitchen. We could watch mice running around on the Hessian.
Brilliant.
Those were the days.
Wow. So the Hessian is the brown sacking.
Mm.
So often you see it at the underside of furniture. If you turn your couch upside down, if it's an old couch, nowadays it'll just be black. It'll be black
felt
Hessian
or something,
type
yeah.
of thing.
Mm.
But originally it's a hemp Hessian. And we still sell it. We, you know, and it's sold
a
for
hemp
us.
One.
It's
hemp?
Yeah, hemp material, yeah. You can't smoke it now, sorry.
Oh, okay.
But that's gas, yeah. Watch the mice run across the hemp Hessian.
Well, I have a dog who constantly digs up the garden. Is there anything I can use on the lawn that'll put him off?
Yes, but... So the yes is you can put on... There are various things. The best of them is a dried... granule thing that works. The problem is the rain eventually washes it away. So if you get two wet weeks, it's gone. And it's fine if it's a small area. If it's the one area, so we would sell it for flower beds, for flower pots, and it works really well. But we don't sell it for the lawn, because if it's a big lawn, you know, you'd be going through a bag of this once every couple of weeks to try and cover the whole lawn. And they're clever creatures. They'll always find the one area that you missed. Because, you know, they want to dig, and that's all there is to it.
Will, where are these little fruit flies coming from, and how do we get rid of them?
Yeah, they really are everywhere. I suppose, look, we'd probably disappear now that the heat is gone. But if they're genuinely fruit flies, which mostly they are, you know the horrible hanging down papers, fly papers?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but just do them at night time. You know, hang them up. Put them near a light source. So move a lamp. If they're in the kitchen, move a lamp to the worktop and turn on the lamp and hang the flypapers near it. And they'll be stuck to it in the thousands. And the other thing you can do now, they're like your jokes, they're really, really tacky. So wear a pair of disposable gloves. And if you have a banana, take the banana skin and wrap the banana skin with the horrible sticky flypapers, equally known as the brilliant sticky flypapers, because they will go for a banana over every other fruit. If you line up 10 fruit in a row, so the apple, the pear, the banana, they'll go for the banana every time. And when you peel the banana, when the banana skin peeled, the peeled banana skin is so attractive to them. And just wrap the flypaper around the banana skin and sit it on a plate or sit it on a piece of...
And it'll just be a magnet.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, it's really tacky, as I say, so maybe cling film the plate first so that you can just peek the cling film and the whole lot and wrap the whole lot and put it in the bin. But it works really, really well.
Hope that helps. 083 30 10 103 on text and WhatsApp. Now, still to talk about today, big meeting in Dublin, as the Agriculture Minister and the Environment Minister tussle it out over how much agricultural emissions will have to fall between now and 2030. Farmers say they're at their limit with 22%. The Green Party favours something closer to 30%. Who'll win this tug of war? More details in 15 minutes. Good morning to you two handsome boys.
That's
from the lady in Specsavers. No doubt. Anyway, please clarify if it is starlings, the black fellas, or sparrows, the brown fellas, who go inside and build their nests under tiles. The fellas under my tiles are small and brown.
Yeah, so the small brown birds, kind of speckledy brown, are starlings. And they go in under the tiles, so you can't see anything whatsoever except bird crap everywhere. The sparrows or the house martins build mud nests on the surfaces, or, you know, you can see the nest. So if it's in a shed, you look up, you can still see loads of bird crapping on the ground, but you can actually see a little mud nest in under, you know, on the rafters, under the fascia, on the wall. So that's the difference.
Do you remember you talked about tacky jokes? This isn't one of mine. This was sent in, okay?
Okay.
Time flies like an arrow. Fruit flies like a banana.
I like that.
Will a basil plant in the window or near fruit is also a good deterrent for fruit flies? Never knew that.
Great. But does that mean they just...
don't like the smell?
Yeah, but do they just...
proximity? Or?
Does it get them out of the room or just further away, if you know what I mean?
Test it and find out.
Yes, I will. I have basil at home. I'll bring it in. That's a great tip.
Seamus in Clara asks, how do you get rid of flying ants in a sitting room? Would that other solution Brian mentioned work? Flying ants aren't going to be attracted to a banana, are they?
No. So the flying ants they're attracted to each other. So they're not attracted to, when they're flying, they're mating.
Oh, right.
So the reason they're clustering, we mentioned this last week.
He's back on his orgy again.
Yeah, there's a big orgy going on in the sitting room and it's all flying ants mating. So if they're, where did he say they're clustering?
In the sitting room.
He doesn't say anything else, no.
No, he doesn't give detail on the sofa, you know, while Emmerdale is on.
They're probably clustering on a wall or a door or a window. So you can spray your Insectrol or your death, well, use Insectrol because it's crystal clear, on any surface like that they're clustering. And when they crawl over it, they'll die. But really, the only, whether they're flying ants or ordinary ants, the ant stop bait stations are the only thing that work long term.
Edel wants suggestions to keep the rain, whenever it may arrive, from coming down the chimney and causing the soot to wetten in the range.
Yeah.
We put a new chimney cap on when we got a new flue last year, so the rain must be entering by the sides of the cap. Could it be blowing in depending on the wind direction?
It would be unusual. Now, I mean, yesterday we had, you know, torrential rain in parts of the Midlands. I mean, absolutely torrential. And of course, the range isn't on, you would hope, in the recent weather. But I mean, the chimney, the anti-bird, anti-rain chimney cowl does stop rain. It comes out over it. So that shouldn't happen. So the worry would be, for some reason, it shouldn't be condensation really at this time of the year either. So is it, just look, your chimney, anti-bird, anti-rain means that it's like, it used to be called a Chinese hat because it comes out further than the chimney itself. It should be coming down well out over the chimney. It would want to be a very unusual rain that would come in at a peculiar angle over a sustained period of time that it wouldn't work.
We'll have house martins in the shed, so they produce lots of crap as well.
They certainly do.
Yeah. And a few people commenting on brown versus black. So sparrows are probably the small brown birds. And another listener insists that either sparrows or starlings will go in under the tiles in the house.
So starlings definitely will, yeah.
Mm. Look, it could be either. I'm not sure really you're going to ask for ID, are you?
Sorry, can I see your ID there, please?
Call Birdwatch Ireland here. Next, 083 3010 103 is from a listener who's disappeared. We'll be back with that in a moment.
Mr. Fixit on Midlands 183 returns next Wednesday morning at 10:20 with Armount Furniture, Cloncullag Industrial Estate to Lamore, and their full range of furniture and furnishings for every room in the home. Find Armount Furniture to Lamore on Facebook.
And it reappeared. A bunch in a glass of water is a great way for keeping flies away. Oh, as in corpses. So seemingly, if you have a glass of water,
right,
and you have a load of corpses of the flies,
okay,
it somehow deters more, according to Catherine.
A bunch of dead flies?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I haven't tried that.
Okay, that sounds strange. Are you sure it's not a bunch of something else? Is it not a bunch of basil leaves or parsley leaves or something?
Maybe that's what she means.
I would imagine she says a bunch. I'd imagine there's just one word missing there.
Could be. You were an interpreter now. Okay, next. Will, I presume that there's nothing Brian can do to help, but it is always worth asking. No, it's not.
It is. It is. It's always worth asking. But I would presume whatever the question is, I can't help either if it starts like that. But it's always worth asking.
I have a little digital jewellery safe at home, but the batteries have run out. And the batteries are on the inside.
Oh.
There is a slot for a key in case of emergency.
That was my solution. Okay, go on.
But I can't find the key.
All right, okay. See, sometimes that slot is covered and you don't actually see it. So if ever you're getting a digital safe for the house, for anywhere, it should always come with an override key. Make sure, because otherwise, anything can break down. Anything digital can break down as well. Never mind the batteries going flat. We had a guy a couple of years ago. And now, have a look. Sometimes, if you look on the outside of it, sometimes there's a little plus and minus sign. And that's designed, even though the batteries are on the inside, on the outside of it, there's a little plus minus side and two little contact points to put a 9-volt battery, a smoke alarm battery, on it. So you just hold the battery up against it. But we had a guy in the shop a long time ago, but it worked for him. He had this problem and he phoned us and we said, look for the key, and he couldn't find the key. So we told him how to drill out the lock if it came to that. Now, obviously, if you drill out the lock, you know, it's damaged and you may or may not be able to replace it. So that is a possibility. But he phoned me back later and said, I came up with a solution. He was all excited, naturally, and fair dues to him. He put a blow heater on it. So, you know the way if you have batteries and the batteries have run down and you want to use them, it used to be you put them in a radiator. And you got a little bit longer out of them. Whatever the heat did to the batteries, it kind of brought them back to life. Now, for a short period of time, the heat somehow re-energized, whatever the batteries. He put a blow heater on the front of the safe and left it on for half an hour and then tried it again and it worked.
Just to clarify, when you say blow heater, do you mean...
A fan heater.
Right, not a blow torch.
No. A hairdryer.
Gotcha.
Okay, a hairdryer, a blow heater. A hairdryer you have to hold.
Yes.
A blow heater you can put it on for 10 minutes, 15 minutes and walk away. Yeah. But I thought it was brilliant. He said it worked.
It makes sense because even with electric cars, for instance, they don't perform as well when the weather is cold.
Right, yes.
They get far better performance, longer mileage and so on when it's warm.
Yeah,
exactly. That's genius.
Yeah, I thought it was absolutely... I had to give him full credit now, I have to say. I can't remember who it was now, but it was a great idea.
So in answer to your question, Brian couldn't help, but some random gentleman did. He'll be back next Wednesday, 10:20.
God willing.
And he'll be at Clunes Hardware in the meantime. Good morning. Now, still to discuss today... What is the biggest ice cream cone you can buy in the Midlands? We mentioned there was a foot long available in County Meath, but we reckon we've tracked down the biggest to Mullingar. More shall be revealed a little later. And maybe you want to enter that contest and say, no, you've got the biggest one. Ice creams we're talking about. Now, let's move on to what is the biggest political story of the day, the Trunch talks taking place, aimed at reducing emissions in the agriculture sector. On one side, farmers are saying 22% is the limit they can reduce by between now and 2030. The Green Party favours a target closer to 30%, arguing that it will place an undue burden on the rest of society if agriculture doesn't go further. Let's hear from Junior Agriculture Minister and Green Party Senator Pippa Hackett. And she says agriculture needs to play its part.
We have a huge challenge ahead in terms of reducing our greenhouse gas emissions across the economy. I mean, the big sectors are energy, our transport and agriculture. It's really one big jigsaw, and it's essential that we, you know, get the jigsaw pieces in the right places. And certainly by doing that, we must ensure that we bring the farming community with us, and to do so in a way that strengthens farm incomes and builds resilience for the future.
Now, on the other side of the table from Eamon Ryan, her party leader, will be the Agriculture Minister, Charlie McConnellogue. And let's hear what sort of representations have been made to him by the Irish Farmers Association. Its Leinster Regional Chairman and beef and sheep farmer in County Laois is Francie Gorman. Morning, Francie.
Good morning, Will.
Tell us what messages you've been giving the Minister ahead of these talks.
I suppose the first thing we'd have to say is that, you know, there is an issue with climate change. There's no question about that. And farmers, you know, whether you're a farmer, a builder, or a pub owner, or a shop owner, I think everybody has to play their part. And we'll certainly, we are willing to play our part and have been playing our part in trying to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And you know, they've set a target going back about 12 months ago, somewhere between 22 and 30%. And I suppose the reason that target was set was firstly, I suppose, to give give us the time to assess how could farmers reach whatever target would be set. And if you look at the Chagas-Mack curve, it tells us that farmers can, you know, by doing all the current things that we need to do to reduce our emissions, we can get to 16 or 17%. With the developments in science and research, there's a feeling there that we could get to 22%. But if we get to 30%, it's Armageddon for the sector. And that's the message that we've been given to the Minister.
Flesh that out for us. When you say Armageddon, you mean what exactly?
Well, the Farmers' Journal, the KPMG commissioned a report for the Farmers' Journal, which suggested that there would be 54,000 job losses and a hit to the rural economy of almost 4 billion if the target was set at 30%. And to be clear now, the target is not, it's a target. It's not a plan. There's been no implication, there's been no studies done about the implication of this at farm level. There's been no studies done about the implication of the there's been no talk about the implication of bad legislation around this. And I mean, even at 22%, Will, you're looking at a hit, based on the KPMG report, you're looking at a hit of 1.1 billion in rural Ireland and 10,000 jobs. And every percent you will go above that, you're going to hit every farming family in the country. And we talk about sectors like, we have the agriculture sector, undoubtedly, but if you look at the other sectors, what are the other sectors? Well, the other sectors are made up of everybody, including farmers.
Yeah, well, you know, you have energy, you have industry, you have transport, you have households.
We use transport, we use energy, we use industry in various different forms. And the big difference between us and if you want to call it the other sectors are, and that's why the 22% was put there, and it may seem low, is because we have no option to be able, we have no ability to be able to pass on the increased costs of this to our Glanbias, to our ABPs, to the companies that buy our grain. So not alone will we be carrying a 22% a cut in reductions for us as farmers, we're going to be expected to carry a pro rata cost for the energy, transport and other sectors that are going to, the way they will meet their targets is they'll increase the cost down to everybody that's dealing with them. And as farmers, we have no way of passing on those costs to everybody else. So at 22%, even though there has been no study done by the department to point out the implications of it at farm level, we feel that that is achievable. And if you put into legislation a target of 30%, that's unachievable. It's like asking, you know, you know, Laois to go and win the All-Ireland final next Sunday. They can't do it. They're not there. So a target needs to be set when it goes into legislation that's achievable. And there also needs to be a pathway defined by the likes of Chagas and the government as to how we can get to that 22%. And that's not clearly defined at the moment. And if you go beyond 22%, it's not defined at all. And
well, let's put some shape on it, because the big gases, greenhouse gases emitted by agriculture are methane and nitrous oxide, and methane accounts for 2/3 of all emissions nearly from agriculture. That brings us back to the national herd and the size of it. So what at 22% and what at 30% would be the implications for the herd?
Those figures haven't been put out there. And that's one of our big asks. Before any decision was taken, we needed to see the figures put in place by our government. They did the same when they dealt with cap reform earlier on in the year. There was supposed to be a cost implication study done, and that wasn't done. It hasn't been done here either. And you can't take decisions as important as this blindfolded. And that's what's happened here. But we do know that if 100% of farmers adopted 100% of the actions that we can do presently to reduce emissions, we get to 17%. There's a lot more can be done around the use of fertiliser at farm level, the use of multi-species swards. That research is ongoing. There's also another issue as well, and John Sweeney yesterday dissed it. But I travelled on a train from Amsterdam down to Brussels about a week ago, or a bus from Amsterdam to Brussels, and by train from Brussels to Paris. And there's more biodiversity at home in my parish in Ballinakil than I saw in that whole journey from Amsterdam to Paris. And we've been asked to jump at a bar that's a hell of a lot higher than farmers in other European countries. And look, I suppose, I'm going to say it and it probably won't be popular, but you have people like John Sweeney, a retired professor out of Maynooth, who sat on the board of Antashke, and you have the Green Party, Eamon Ryan, Minister Eamon Ryan and Minister Hackett, and I don't see them as being pro-environment. I see them as being anti-farming. And we do need...
In what way? Because we cannot escape the facts of how much of our CO2 emissions are... methane, our nitrous oxide, comes from agriculture.
Yeah, well, that percentage is in the I think it's 32-33%. But percentage in Germany is about 12%, because they're a heavy industrialised country. They produce cars, they produce tractors. We don't do that in this country. What we do is we're a food producing country. So they're always going to be higher here because of that. And I think the 22% reflects a target that's achievable. And if you're going to legislate a target, that target has to be achievable. If you are legislated at 30%, that target is unrealistic. Well, sorry, Will, it's not unrealistic if we're prepared to decimate farming and decimate the incomes of people in rural Ireland. And you go into towns like Tullamore, Tullow. I was in Castletown Roach last week. It just sticks in my head. There's three huge agricultural merchants in that area. And if you take agriculture out of them towns, you suck the lifeblood out, not just out of rural Ireland, but out of those major towns like Portlaoise, Tullamore, Kilkenny, Carlow. I mean, Carlow's a classic example. A huge tillage county with massive agricultural engineering businesses in it, hugely dependent on farming. And that's what we do in this country. We're a food producing country that produces food for 40 million people more sustainably than most other countries in the world. And if we don't produce that food here, it will be produced somewhere else with a higher carbon footprint, and it will do more damage to the planet. So it is greenwashing. And look, are we going to have a food security issue? We're not. And I don't, people don't. So it's not a fact that sinks home at people, but there will be food security implications in other parts of the world if we don't stay producing the food in this part of the world where we have some of the best farmers in the world and the best climate for doing it, and we do it more sustainably than anywhere else.
Finally, let's just run through some of the actions and whether we can get to 22% or beyond by doing this. So you've mentioned some of them already: improving animal productivity, improving grass quality and dry matter and herd health, and maybe reducing days to slaughter. Manure, like how much can be applied in spring? Again, is there any low emission technological solution there? Fertilizer.
There's a huge list in there, and we have. To be fair to farmers down through the years, farmers, the best of farmers, and I'm not going to say I'm one of them, but the very best of farmers always adopted the best advice that came out of bodies like Chagas. And to be fair to farmers in the agricultural sector, this is a new debate we're having now. It's not something that developed 10 years ago. It really, like, milk quotas went in 2000 and, 13. And at that stage, the ambition was we produce as much milk as possible in the country, and rightly so. It's delivering a great income for people who are milking cows. Hard work, but people are making a good living out of it. It has delivered massively economically, and I can see it in towns that have travelled through in Munster, you know, how well off they have become in the last 6 or 7 years since the abolition of milk quotas. So, I mean, it's only that far back that farmers were been told, and in the years in between, to drive on. And this is it. This is a new discussion we're having now. The science is new around it. So things like low emission slurry spreading, the planting of trees in your farm, how we manage our hedgerows,
consider all the sheds and the prospect of solar panels going on them.
Absolutely. It's one of the things that has not been done. And even if it was been done in the morning, we are not getting credit in the ledger for what we're doing on that side. It's all about how much we're emitting. So if we plant more trees, or we put solar panels, or we get into renewable energy. Anaerobic digestion is one that Minister Ryan dissed 2 years ago when our President Tim Cullinan put the point to him, and because it suits his narrative, now he's talking about it. But anaerobic digestion is not for every farmer. It's a multi-million euro investment for a small number of large-scale operators that could justify it. Forestry is another one. I mean, we are a forestry industry, and we need to plant more trees, and farmers would be willing to do it. But, you know, we have Minister Hackett there with her hands on the levers of power in terms of how our forestry is managed. People can't get licences. People can't get their forestry roadways in place. And if you asked any farmer in the morning, will he put his land into forestry? The answer would be no, because that sector is a disaster.
And that's going to be, you've got the environmental impact of that sort of decision, but there are great companies around Ireland, around the Midlands, CJ Sheeran's and so on, who rely on farmers continuing to plant forestry, and there's an economic impact as well as an environmental impact.
Well, we have farmers who can't get, felon licences at the moment, and we have businesses like Sheeran's and McMahon's now are certainly earlier on in the year, some of them were importing timber from Scotland, and we can't get tenant licences for our farmers to fell their trees. Who's going to plant trees in that environment? Nobody. So, I mean, there's an awful lot can be done to address this problem. But going back, I mean, we started at 22 or 30% initially, and I mean, to be fair, 22% is a massively challenging figure for us to reach. But if that's set above 22%, it's unreachable. It's put into legislation that we have to get there. And you're going to see, maybe court cases taken against possibly the Minister for Agriculture for not doing enough to maybe say cull the national herd or pull away incentives for people to develop their business. So that's why the target, if it goes into legislation, it has to be a realistic target. And it has to be achievable. And we believe, while it's massively challenging, the 22% target is achievable. And I think that anybody, any TD or any government minister that walks into the Dáil or goes into cabinet next week and sets a target above that are selling out farmers in a big way. And they're selling out the rural economy, and they're selling out people who deal with farmers and work in the wider agri-industry. So,
we've only glanced at some of the options that will be on the table in those discussions between the Agriculture Minister and the Environment Minister today. I think you've made your point very clear, Francie, and thank you for taking the call.
Look, we'll appreciate it. Appreciate getting the chance to get on. And look, at any stage, we'd be willing to come back again and, you know, put our side with whoever. And thanks very much.
And I've no doubt there will be more debate, whether it's with Pippa Hackett, whether it's with Eamon Ryan himself, whether it's with John Sweeney, many of the people who have a view on this. And 0818 300 103 is the Midlands 103 comment line for your opinion too. Because, as we read in, I think it was the Irish Examiner yesterday, if agriculture doesn't go far enough, the burden will shift to other sectors, and you've got ideas floating around like going back to one-car families. That might be a divide-and-conquer type situation, but what would be the sacrifice you're willing to make? 083 30 10 103 on text and WhatsApp. Here's what you're saying about agricultural emissions and whether to reduce by 22% or 30%. Will, The question is, who puts food in the shops? If we have no farmers, we have no food, and ways have to be found by science to reduce levels logically, is the message. A caller says, look at farmer protests in Holland. Irish farmers need to wake up. That's from Jimmy in Port Arlington. Hilda suggests you've got to look at the big picture. If farming isn't worth it anymore, former farmers can sell the land that they no longer work. Probably to landlord TDs, she adds. Colm in Roscommon regards this as another attack on rural Ireland. First was the turf, now it's agricultural emissions. What will be next? He believes the Green Party won't be in government the next time around. And we had talked earlier about unclaimed tax and how some workers are overpaying by €1,800 typically, according to taxback.com. Well, I discovered some years ago that I wasn't eligible to pay dirt tax on savings, but it had been deducted. So I set about reclaiming it and was told I could only claim for the previous 4 years. So this meant a large portion of what I had paid had gone. I contacted Revenue and the lady told me I couldn't get a refund. I was no longer a PAYE worker. I'd have to set up a company, blah, 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 blah. The long and the short is I complained to a supervisor and the cheque was with me in less than a week. Not all Revenue staff are competent, in my experience, says this listener. And a few people have asked, well, why can't Revenue automatically work out whether you have overpaid your tax and process a payment? And the challenge is it depends where the calculations went wrong. If, for instance, you have not claimed your medical expenses, well, Revenue have no way of knowing how often did you go to the doctor, how much did you spend on medicine, and so on and so forth. And that can be one of the problems. And maybe if you got married during the year, the exact date wouldn't be with Revenue and they don't know whether you want to split all of your allowances between you, whether you want to concentrate on one person or the other, you have to tell them. So My Account is the service online, revenue.ie. It's well worth signing up, taking a look and checking if you're entitled to anything. Now, the other big story today, the decision by Allied Irish Bank to withdraw its ATM from Birr, Edenderry and Rathdowney, just three of 70 towns around the country where the bank will no longer be offering the ATM service. Mixed feelings on this, and a lot of older listeners feeling, this is just the latest kick while they're down. John King is a member of Laois County Council based in the Rathdowney area. What are your feelings on this, John? Good morning.
Good morning, Will. It's very disappointing for me as a councillor here in Rathdowney to hear that we're going to have the closure of the ATM in the AIB in Rathdowney. Back only 2 years ago, we had two banks in Rathdowney, and unfortunately, we lost the Bank of Ireland. And of course, the Bank of Ireland at the time had an ATM machine outside on the building. And the fact that that's gone now, is certainly it has a great effect with business in the town. But I also have a serious concern as well. We have lots of people here that run businesses and go to Nightsafe here in Rathdowney. And I'm asking the question, is the AIB, have they thought of the safety of these people? If the Nightsafe is going to be closed, do they have to drive to Port Laois, or do they have to hold money in their houses? And the biggest fear is, of course, if the criminals out there knowing all the business, that if they have to secure money in their home, they're in danger of being robbed and so on. But
John, we'll clarify that, but my understanding is the decision is limited only to the ATM machine.
Okay, well, can I say this? Before they make a decision, I think there's a lot of things that has to be clarified. I also want to know as well, is the ATM machine, we have one in Rathdowney, in the bank itself, and is that machine, is it going to be still operational, or if it is only to of course it's just to making hours, but the person, that there's no score for the person that wishes to launder the money. We have a lot of elderly people everywhere, I would say, and not only in Rathdowney, it's around the area as well, and Rathdowney is a rural town. The reason why the bank's done so well, because we had people from Urneford and Johnstown and Burstall Street and Earl doing their business here. But if the service of the bank is going to go, we're going to lose business in a small rural town, it's going to affect it from the town and enhance itself in the future. So I am asking the AIB to rethink. The most,
and can I check, John, I apologise, I'm just not familiar enough with Rathdowney. Is there another ATM in a shop in some other setting?
Yes, no. We have an ATM, okay, in the supermarket, okay, but all these private the ATMs, they only give out so much money. I think there could be limits of 300 or 400 euros on them. But a proper ATM, every customer that's a customer of the bank could have a limit of maybe 800 to 1,000. But certainly, the loss of an ATM and the loss of an ATM in the bank, the loss of an ATM in general is shocking. But just what they say in Durno, that the credit union, St. Canis, the credit union has put an ATM on the wall in the credit union, which is good. But I don't think this is fair to people in rural Ireland, not people of my age group and older. They're not familiar with having cards and so on and so forth. And they'd like to have their personal touch. But do I see the banks moving forward? There's no bank managers as such now. If you wish to apply for a loan for a mortgage, you do your application okay online, which I don't mean the personal touch is gone fully. So, and of course, when the ATM services are going to go, the next thing that will happen, as happened with the Bank of Ireland, there will be full closure on it. But it's not fair to people if they wish to do business. I'm actually dealing with the Bank of Ireland, and I go down to Aberdeeks now and have to do business there. And I meet quite a few people from right down. Aberdeeks is a town, it's congested with traffic, it's a busy street, and I think it's going to lead to incidents regarding traffic incidents and so forth. But certainly I would ask the AIB to rethink before, and I do understand also the willingness to offer other services to the post office, and that's okay, PN bills and so on.
Mm. Well, a listener has already pointed that out, and just to play devil's advocate, if we are trying to preserve our post office network and encouraging them to take on extra services, are we contradicting ourselves then when we lament that the banks have transferred these services over to them?
Well, of course, we probably don't know at this moment in time how much services are they going to transfer. I suppose that it will be the TV license and so on, and maybe a smaller business. But I'd like to know the type of business that they are going to transfer to the post office. I'd imagine it'd be fairly limited. Now, also on another note, the post office here in Supervalley and Rathdowney, and the post office and the Supervalley is quite busy. But I think that a post office business and running a post office is a person business, each and every person. And I do see people queuing in Supervalleys in general, but the privacy is gone as well. Your business with money is very private, and I still think it should be held private. In money transactions, people are very concerned. I see there in shops as well, people, when they know there's a post office there, they're selling all sorts of things and so on and so forth. But the post office business in the past was private business to the person and to the post office card. But we're losing a lot of that as well. Everything doesn't have to be all big, doesn't have to go to big supermarkets either. But I'm disappointed today because right now he's driving down.
Okay, well, let's put aside the rights and the wrongs argument for a moment and put on the Fine Gael hat. And I know you're not in the Dáil, nor do you sit at the cabinet table, but Pascal Donoghue, the finance minister, he's ultimately one of the biggest shareholders in AIB on behalf of the taxpayer. So why are they not able to instruct the bank not to do this?
Well, I'm going to be asking the Fine Gael councillor here to meet with my colleagues in East County Council for us to do it from the ground up. And I think we should have been informed. All politics is local. Pascal McAvoy, in his role, okay, he carries a very high role, but I certainly, the voice of local councillors and local senators has been taken into account. We are the people on the ground to represent the people. And I'm asking Pascal McAvoy and all senators...
I think you mean Pascal Donoghue. Pascal McAvoy would be very flattered to become finance minister, I suspect.
Yeah. No, but I'm going to be raising this. We have an MD meeting here tomorrow in Leash County Council. And I'm asking support from my colleagues. It's all very fine for AIB or any of the banks. I see the loss of the Bank of Ireland here in Rathdowney to go down to town and see where we had an ATM and now the wall is plastered up, the bank is up for sale. And with the loss of a bank, as I say, people don't realise it all. the bank is good for its own town, but it's good for the hinterland within the 15-mile radius as well. So if we do it, and I can see the AIB being close because there's the not so many years ago, when the bank manager came to a town, he was held in very, very high esteem. And of course, he was on all sorts of commissions, this, that, and the other, and he was a part of the community. But now there's no such thing as a bank manager as such. They're office people, and they take into the clerks in a sense, but all applications are done. Before, you'd know leaving the bank when you're at a
it's far more centralised now. It is, and
it's good in some ways, but it's bad in others. But I'm certainly going to raise this tomorrow at a local council meeting here. But I don't want to hear some or see something on the paper or hear it on Minas Radio 3 either. That I think it's unfair towards the councillors. We should be involved, and we have to have a voice, because when the local issues come up, people will say to us, how come you allow the local AIB bank to close? You've done it with Bank of Ireland, and we are responsible for the people who voted in.
John King, thank you for taking our call today. He is a member of Laois County Council, Fine Gael councillor, and he's based in the Rathdowney area. Now, two other towns in the Midlands affected by AIB's decision to withdraw the ATMs, Birr and Edenderry. And if you're living there, either 083 3010 103 on text and WhatsApp. Indeed, a caller makes the very point John concluded with. When the next election comes around, I hope people, and especially those of the age group most affected, will vote not by tradition or by family politics, but vote for rural Ireland. Do you agree or disagree with that? Because some people, and as I quoted earlier, the research in the UK last year showing only one in six transactions is by cash these days, some people will be totally unaffected and oblivious to banks withdrawing ATMs. Which camp are you in? Is the business card a thing of the past? Well, a company in Athlone hopes to make that the case by producing a new contactless business card. So you tap, and in doing so, you share all of your contact information with your new connection using the same technology that allows you to tap your bank card. Now, one of the co-founders and indeed chief executive of TappyTag is Mark Gibbons. He's been explaining how he came up with the idea in conversation with Midlands 103's Ronan Berry.
We were at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas back in 2020. And it was, we'd been travelling back and forward to that show for a number of years, and I was constantly getting sick of carrying around a bundle of business cards and a bundle of product brochures from different brands, and the big problem was not many of those business cards were making it into my phone. So, and that's what we obviously want to achieve when you make a new connection of connecting, being able to send an email straight away or connecting with a phone call. So. So on the flight home, myself and the two lads, John and Ivan, there we just said, look, there has to be an easier way. There has to be a better solution there. So TappyTag was born after that. So we seen that NFC technology was already in the market in terms of being used on a number of different bits, like your bank card, and that you could tap your bank card off a terminal and make a financial transaction. What a TappyTag is, it has the same technology. It's the same NFC chip inside of our business cards. But when you tap it off a mobile phone, an iPhone or Android, it shares information rather than let's say a financial transaction. So, so you share your TappyTag profile. On your TappyTag profile, it holds your contact details, all of your social media details, your websites, your Revolut, your PayPal, links to your Amazon page. Pretty much anything that has a URL link, you can store on your TappyTag profile. And the really great thing about it is it's always updatable. So you can update it at any time. So you're never out of date. Which is obviously a problem with paper business cards that you mentioned it yourself. You have to go into the attic.
Yeah. If anybody, often, they come in minimum order quantities of 2,000.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I suppose just for listeners' benefit, I actually have in my hand at the minute a TappyTag. So it looks the same size as your conventional business card. It is equally as thin, because I know Mark mentioned like a chip inside it. You cannot see anything on it. It's a piece of wood. It has my name on the front, and it has what looks like a QR code on the back. Very discreet, very, very svelte, very lean. Actually, if somebody found it, they may not know what it was. So just when you get the idea of, like, don't have an idea of this kind of clunky piece of technology, it's very lightweight, fits in the wallet, fits in the pocket, and that effectively does as a business card for me going forward. How did you come about actually developing it then, Mark, like in setting on the size, the format, getting that technology inside the card?
Yeah, well, I suppose that the size of a business card is, it's people know it from over the years that they've used, let's say, paper cards. What TappyTag does, it gives you the ability to replace all of those paper cards. So we thought of keeping the same size, keeping the same format. We also have our phone tag, so it's the exact same technology, just in a small tag that sits on the back of your phone. It can sit under your case or it can pop onto the back of your case. But what we needed to develop was that kind of software solution that once you tap your card that it will lead to. So somewhere that can hold all your information safely, securely. We work with Amazon, so we're based on an AWS platform. And that's out of Dublin, which is quite good. It's obviously security is key. Functionality is really key, and how quick everything loads up, because it is loading up on your phone. That's obviously key. For us, when you connect with somebody, you've got a couple of seconds to kind of make an impression. With TappyTag, you're probably going to need 20 minutes after you tap, because people are going to wonder, how did you do that? How does that work with the card? So it's quite good.
Is there an opportunity as well for, say, companies that could have hundreds or thousands of these Tappy Tags in use with their staff as well? Can you actively track then and see how often it has been used and downloaded? Like, it's creating a whole new data set that could be quite useful for even a sales team.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've early last year we developed Tappy Tag Corporate. So it's also within the Tappy Tag family. So what Tappy Tag Corporate gives you is a full management system. So we're working with the likes of, let's say, Deloitte at the moment. So obviously they have a lot of staff, and they can log into their management system at any time, make changes to all their staff's profiles, and deactivate cards if somebody leaves, update their staff's profiles if somebody gets a promotion. So obviously it's a big cost saving measure. But we also have built in user analytics, so they can see how many taps they're doing as a company, how many taps the individual is doing. They can see the location of the taps on a country level. So if you're at a trade show in the States, you can filter down, and see how many taps you've done in the States between a certain date or a certain period, which is obviously a really good feature when it comes to big corporate companies who are obviously looking to see what they're getting out of their cards. And that's obviously important. We also, with that corporate plan then as well, we have, I'd say this is an exclusive for you, but we have a CRM system then coming down. It's probably about 6 weeks away, I'd say. So what we want to achieve is somebody taps the card, they can follow that full journey from tapping your card to meeting a potential client or a potential sales opportunity, and then following that sales journey from the moment you meet the person to the time you close it. So obviously you meet somebody normally at a trade show or an event. Chances are sometimes something might get missed along the way. So we're thinking with this, with our TappyTag CRM system, that's going to give you a much better chance of closing a sale and growing your client base then as well.
And that's kind of leading, actually, my question was going to be, just before you went into that announcement of what's coming in 6 weeks' time, was if you have two people from different companies who then use a TappyTag, can that data then collate so that you can obviously record, well, that's who I actually met and who I was with as well, just to make sure that, you know, well, I've got a contact on my phone, that's who it is.
So right now, actually, it has that functionality right now. So when you tap your card, there's a connect with me button, which means that you can share your details with the person you've just tapped. But there's also a share your contact card then as well. So there's a two-way connection. They can share their details straight away back with you. That will be captured by CRM. And the other thing as well is we are linking into other CRM systems like Salesforce. And we've an open API for our system, which allows you to receive info and send info then as well. So we're working with a number of companies on that in terms of integrations with their system and our system.
And there's also other kind of quite simple product extensions there too, like asset management tags for equipment and even for tags for pets.
Yeah. Would you believe I got a dog during lockdown? I got a dog during lockdown, and it was one of those light bulb moments where I said, actually, TappyTag could work for pets here. So that's been really good. We're working with Woody's, obviously our direct to consumer site. We're working with Amazon then as well, which is great. But yeah, our asset management side of things is going quite well for us there. In terms of the asset management, we're working with Irish Waterways there at the moment. So and we're tagging their pretty much all their small plant assets. So the likes of their drills, their lawnmowers, their chainsaws, all that sort of stuff. So And that's due to roll out there over the next little while. So it's been a busy year and a half since we started, which is great.
It sounds like when you mentioned the likes of Deloitte and Irish Water as well, you're not talking about small numbers of people there too.
No.
So you've made a significant statement of intent by headquartering yourselves in Athlone. What was the draw for Athlone? A
couple of things. I'm sure my girlfriend is listening, but she was one of them. I was planning on moving to Athlone. Well, we're going to build a house up here. That was always in the back of my mind, that do we travel to Dublin? What way do we do it? Do we set up in Dublin? But the more time I spent down at Athlone, the more I kind of looked to say, okay, it's the perfect place for any company to set up. You've obviously got the college there, which gives you kind of access to kind of young staff, but who are extremely intelligent. They're hungry to learn. So we've took on a couple of staff then as well while we've been up here. Obviously, you've got Enterprise Ireland up here then too. In terms of the grand scheme of things, Dublin is, I see it as kind of turning into a mini London, if that makes sense. It can be difficult. Startups can get swallowed up. Whereas I think you have a little bit more, the pressure's off a little bit more if you, where we are in Athlone, in terms of our office space. It's just a really great place to be based. It's a really, really great, and that's coming from a Dub. It's a really great place to be based. So, we're delighted to be up here.
What does the future look like, say, for Tappytag in Athlone then? Like, if you're exporting to over 40 countries already, is it looking at creating employment, or will you have kind of software people distributed all across the world eventually?
Yeah, no, we definitely want to create jobs. So I think by the end of next year, we want to have, the plan is to have 10 plus people based out of Athlone. Our office needs to be a little bit bigger, I would say, but that's the plan. If we're not hitting that, we're not going to be happy. So, there's tons of stuff happening. There's a lot of stuff happening. There's going to be roles created. So, we're definitely going to need extra bodies.
And his name is Mark Gibbons. If you want to look him up on LinkedIn, he is chief executive at Tappytag. Will it be the next big thing? Or will you stick to the physical business card that has served you so well for so long? It's a bit like our earlier discussion about cashless transactions or still going to the ATM. Which camp are you in? A petrol station in Meath claims to have Ireland's largest cone. Well, anything Meath can do, West Meath can do better, as Peter Dunn is about to prove. He's gone to Rochford's in Mullingar, and yesterday Tom Nally was trying to pull various cones, and I'm not sure if he got quite to the foot-long mark, but update us, Peter. How are things going there?
Well, I've been all around the world. I've been in Vegas, San Francisco. I've been in London, but I've never got a 99 as good as Rochford's in Mullingar. I'm joined with Tomás Nally. Tomás, we're just discussing the major stories of the day, i.e. the big ice creams. Yeah. And what am I holding in my right hand now?
Well, it's more like a meter stick than a ruler, but we're going to try and hit a record.
We're going to try. Do you hear that, Will? We're going to try and break a record here in Mullingar.
Have you ever done this before?
No, I've never done it before. And can I be totally honest with you? I am very nervous. I am very nervous because I've never, not only have I never pulled an ice cream before, but I'm going to try and pull the biggest ice cream in one go. Yeah. How does that sound?
Oh, that sounds great. And we have a new coloured machine as well. So it can be strawberry, chocolate or mint. Not just an old plain one. Whatever you want, we'll do it for you.
Lovely. Let's go. Will we go? Yeah. Will we go behind the counter? I've never been behind a counter here before. This is amazing. I've been coming here for 37 years, but I've never been behind. This is incredible. Wow. Right, Will, we're just
lock
going
up
to the ice cream machine here. Huh? The till. Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I'll be back.
No, lock it up, lock it up, lock it up.
We won't want to charge you for
sending me. Brilliant. No, I tell you what. So, Tomás is just getting the ice cream. I'm going to put this ruler down because we will need it very shortly. And
I don't think you will. I don't think you can measure it on the floor.
Well, look, we'll see. Any wastage, can I bring it home with me?
Of course you can. Have you a dog or cat at home?
No, well, I've me and two kids. So
we'll give you a bucket for it. It'll be grand.
I was being given advice before I left Midlands 103 by our Grace, who said she was pulling ice creams for years in Athlone, and she's trying to tell me, Peter, do this, don't do that, and when you do this, and I got just flabbergasted.
Yeah, you have to have a natural flair for it, but it's all in. The biggest thing is get your ice cream into the actual cone at the start, because if it doesn't go in, it'll just topple over. So that's the biggest tip. We always fill the cones to the absolute brim.
As much as you can.
Yeah.
I am genuinely very nervous pulling this cone. So I'll tell you what, Moss. Can I? Can you show me how to do it first, actually? And then I'll try, if that's okay.
Are you right or left-handed?
I am ambidextrous.
Great. Yeah. Again. Okay, you'll be doing this now, no bother at all. So what we're going to do is fill the cone. We're going to pull it from the machine with the left. Okay. And then we're going to just let the handle down slowly, fill the middle. Okay. And then we're going to go concentric circles around as much as we can here. I'd say we're at a foot now, are we?
I hope somebody has a camera. We need proof.
We do. We have a camera. We also have a little bit of spillage. And we are at about 5 inches, which is what in old money? It is about 11 centimetres.
Yeah, I don't think 5 inches is going to cut it, Peter.
No. Right, Tomas. Let me in there.
Your turn.
Yeah.
Slow but sure now, Peter.
Okay, I'm genuinely nervous about pulling this ice cream. So, right, I have to get it into the cone first and then kind of go round anti-clockwise?
Yeah.
While coming out. Okay, yeah. Perfect. Right, let's do this. Okay, Tomas, can you hold my microphone there for me, please? And, okay, I'm going to try and drop...
I'll move out of your way there. You'll go straight onto the machine.
I'm going to try and drop the ice cream into the cone first. Yep. Okay, and then we'll go...
Bring it up a little bit closer.
Okay, a little bit closer.
Lower your hand.
There we go. Okay, right. Okay.
This is an art form.
It is genuinely an art form. Oh, my goodness. Oh, I've stopped. Oh,
keep going. Keep going.
Okay.
I'm not eating that cone.
Slower, do I?
A little bit. Just let the handle up
Okay. Right. Okay. I've
seen worse.
No, you haven't. I can't take the microphone back.
You're not going to charge somebody for that, are you?
And are we? Well, we're just going to charge Midlands 103 Finance Department for this cone because
we won't do it by the foot. Or else
no,
be
we better not do.
It we can't. We can't see it, but we can hear the laughter and the disaster. And I'm not paying for that. How big is it?
It is, right, let's measure it here. It is, Moss is going to measure this now. It is about 12 centimetres tall by about 12 centimetres wide, if you can imagine. What's that in inches? I don't know. It's about five inches. But look, I've moulded it kind of into itself. So it's realistically, it's about 24 centimetres long.
Stop. You're just compensating. Halves, what's the record? What does Tom say the record in Rochford's is?
What's the record, Tom?
I'm not sure, actually. There was a few done over the last couple of days that were huge.
Right. But is this your record? Your own personal record?
No.
What's your own personal record?
It's around 10. About 10 inches.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Nice one. Right. So about 10 inches. That's okay. And
I don't believe him.
Do you think I need a little bit more practice?
You're all right. We'll give you a job during the flat.
Yeah, I'll have a job here. That's grand. You hear that, Will? I'll be taking 2 weeks off.
No.
Just to practice my ice cream.
No, I think you're better off sticking to breakfast,
much,
Peter.
We need as much help as we can during the flat.
Grand, okay, right.
Stick to the breakfast show. Stick to the day job. I don't think you're going to be hired in Rochford's anytime soon. But
no,
thanks, Peter.
I don't think so. Thanks very much, Will. Take care.
That's where we leave it. The hunt for the Midlands' largest cone. Well, we had 5 inches there in Rochford's. I'm not sure if you can do better, but we'll find out over the course of the next couple of weeks. Sinead Hubble put the programme together. You can thank her. We'll be back tomorrow morning from 9. Take care. Bye-bye.